This is Upstate HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen along with you. Metabolic syndrome affects a third of United States adults and is associated with countless medical problems and even premature death. And it's often a precursor to diabetes and cardiac conditions as well. But now a new study has some hopeful and helpful news for these individuals, and here to tell us all about it is Dr. Paula Treif. She's professor of psychiatry and medicine and a senior associate dean for faculty affairs at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Treif. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So you've just completed a study conducted in cooperation with Upstate's Joslin Diabetes Center.
Right.
Tell us about it.
It's actually not quite complete. We're actually still collecting data for another few months. But this is a study that was based on a pretty well-known project called the Diabetes Prevention Program, or the DPP. And the DPP was a large trial, covered the whole country, where they worked with patients who had metabolic syndrome, who are people who are at risk for diabetes, and they worked with them to help them lose weight to see if weight loss would lead to prevention of diabetes. They compared that to medication, essentially. And what they found was that the weight loss was more effective than medication in helping people prevent diabetes over a three-year period.
So you already knew those kinds of findings going into your study.
That's right.
So what was the goal of your particular study?
So when the DPP was done, it was done with a very select group of people, very tightly controlled research environment. And now a lot of us are doing studies looking at how can we take those results and translate them into the community and actually make them work with real people in a real setting. And so the goal of our study was twofold. One was to deliver the DPP by phone, because we know that it's really difficult for people to get into offices on a regular basis. If they're working or if they're disabled or live in a rural area, that their access to those kinds of interventions is kind of limited. So we delivered the DPP by phone. And we also wanted to build on the relationship that patients have with their primary care providers. We know that primary care providers are very significant in helping people lose weight. They help them think about it. They help them know what they need to do. And so they have a relationship with them, usually a long-lasting relationship. So for something to work over a long period of time, they probably need that kind of a long-lasting relationship.
So it's already existing, a relationship, and trust and all of the other things.
Right.
And they understand all the different ramifications within that patient's life. And so that can play a role in how they advise them.
Yes.
So when you're talking about deliver the DPP.
Yeah.
Tell us what that means.
So the DPP was a 16-session class, essentially, and it covers the kinds of things that you would normally think of when you think of a weight loss class. There was nothing really magic about it. They worked on counting calories, counting fat grams, increasing activity, helping people not live a sedentary lifestyle. It was all about working to lose, for the DPP, it was 7% of your body weight through decreased caloric intake and increased activity.
So it was exercise and diet, basically.
Right. Exercise and diet.
And they found that actually was effective
yes.
in diabetes prevention.
Yes. That weight loss, that led to weight loss. What they did was they created the best weight loss program they thought they could based on all the research that says what works. For example, research says that if people keep track, log what they eat, that's one thing that
diaries.
Seems to really help them.
Food diaries.
The DPP included food diaries. If people weigh themselves regularly, that seems to help them. So the DPP included that. So they created this kind of gold standard weight loss intervention and then delivered it in these 16 sessions.
But the difference in your study was, in the earlier studies, it was done in person.
Yes.
And now you are doing it via telephone.
Yes.
And that's a significant difference for
right.
the reasons that you mentioned.
Yes. And the other difference was that in the DPP, it was done one-to-one, face-to-face. And we wanted to, a lot of these translations where people are doing it in the community are doing it in group settings, because the assumption is that groups are more cost-effective and that maybe they're better. But nobody really has looked at that. So we also wanted to look at that. So we also compared an individual intervention, a patient just with an educator, to a group intervention.
Well, I want to get to what you found in just a minute, but tell us some more about who these people are or were that you chose for the study. When we talk about metabolic syndrome, I mean, it's been in the news. People talk about it all the time, and obviously it can lead to all kinds of cardiac problems. I understand things like, obviously, obesity. There's a certain amount of high blood fat, high blood pressure, and even high sugar levels, which
yes.
obviously could be precursor and
right.
can lead to all kinds of cardiac problems.
That's right.
So why did you choose this group of metabolic syndrome as opposed, for example, to people who were already diabetic?
In the DPP, the focus was people who were at risk for diabetes. And so we also wanted to look at people who were at risk. And people with metabolic syndrome, as you described, which is obesity plus one of these other conditions, are known to be at risk for diabetes. There is a large trial that's going on now called the Look Ahead Trial, which is looking at whether weight loss affects complications and other outcomes for people with diabetes. It's just a different population.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Paula Treif. We're talking about a new study testing the effectiveness of telephone coaching for weight loss intervention for individuals with metabolic syndrome, actually pre-diabetics. So what did you find?
So my colleague, and this is Dr. Ruth Weinstock, she is the medical director of the Joslin Diabetes Center, and we are kind of co-investigators on this. And what we found was that, one, that it's feasible. We could do it by phone. We could do it in groups by phone. So those are basically conference calls, and that it worked. So we looked at people after 1 year, and after 1 year, both the group intervention and the individual intervention lost a significant amount of weight. We haven't looked at our other outcomes. We have other things that we're looking at too. But the really interesting part, we think, is that after 2 years, that the individual people in the individual intervention gradually started to regain, which is very commonly seen in weight loss trials, even in the DPP, that you lose weight initially, and then as time goes on, people slowly start to regain.
So it's almost like you're more highly motivated, perhaps at the outset. Is that possible?
Yeah, it's hard to know why.
Why? Yeah.
It's hard to know why.
You'd be speculating.
It's a very common finding, yeah. But what we found was that the people in the group who were doing this together actually continued to lose. So after 2 years, that gradual, not only did they not start to regain, but they continued to lose. So we think that's very exciting.
What's your hypothesis for that?
So our main assumption here is that it has to do, obviously, with the nature of the group. So in the group, one of the things that happens is that there's a lot of support for each other.
Just help us out to understand exactly. Yeah.
This is on the telephone.
So this is conference calling?
A conference call, yeah.
So everybody can hear everybody else. So it's kind of like a group over the phone.
Exactly. That's exactly right. There's an educator, and there's up to 8 people, although most of the groups were 4 to 5. And the so they're supporting each other. They're saying, oh, good for you, Sally. You did really great. So there's that kind of emotional support. They also give each other advice, a lot of advice that the educator really has a script that she's following, and these are the things that she's trying to teach. But they'll say things like, oh, I tried this new low-fat cheese, it was really terrific, or there's a store that sells this food that I thought was really great, or this is how I got exercise into my life. So they not only support each other, but they provide hints, I think, helpful
useful
hints.
Information.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we have models for all of this. I mean, obviously AA is
That's a classic one,
but there have been models throughout all kinds of medical
Think of Weight Watchers,
exactly.
All those group settings. But what was exciting, we thought, was that really no one has demonstrated that group is not only as effective, but maybe more effective in the long run.
So these were all adults.
Yes.
Is that correct? Is there any thought about doing this kind of thing? Obviously, with the rate of obesity growing amongst children, is there any thought to doing something like
yes.
this with children as well?
Yeah. Well, actually, both Dr. Weinstock and I were involved in another trial called the Today Trial, which is with youth who have diabetes, youth who have type 2 diabetes, which is still a pretty rare event, but growing. And that was around weight loss and medication as well. In that case, the weight loss actually was not, the intervention wasn't successful in weight loss, and it wasn't as helpful as the medication. There are other groups that are studying kids, working with kids who are not diabetic but are obese and helping them lose weight. There's a lot of those kinds of studies.
Yeah, very important, especially with the growth of diabetes in our community and in our country, and all of the sequelae, all the problems that follow from being diabetic.
That's right. And if you have those problems when you're, 11, you have many more years ahead of you to develop the complications and have the difficulties. And they're finding with the kids with type 2 that they're developing complications at a faster rate.
Wow.
It seems like it's a more aggressive disease process. It's just beginning to look at that.
Yeah, well, also, isn't it pretty new that we've had that many young diabetics?
Yes, type 2. That's right. It's very new.
So how did you pick your first of all, how many subjects were there?
We had, I think it was 267 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had 5 practice sites, 3 more rural sites in Oneida and other areas, and then 2 sites in Syracuse, our own University Healthcare Center and the Syracuse Neighborhood Health Center.
And that was also as a way of trying to just kind of, it was a random notion of seeing?
Yes, we wanted to, we didn't want to just have one group. We wanted to see, you know, our assumption here is that the phone is really good for helping people in rural areas, as I said, so we wanted to reach out to rural areas, that it was helpful in reaching out to the poor and underserved because they might not be able to get into settings, so we wanted to reach out to them as well. So we wanted to broadly reach people.
Also, it sounded to me like one of the things that stood out to me was not only that the telephone was an effective way of reaching all these individuals who might otherwise not be able to come to sessions, but also by using a primary care people as opposed to diabetic counselors, perhaps, mm-hmm. could be more cost-effective. And as you said, also within their normal course of care.
Yeah, we actually do have someone looking at cost effectiveness. We don't have that data yet, so we don't really know. That's our assumption as well, because the educators who were identified at the sites were mostly LPNs. I think we had one nurse practitioner, and we had one medical office assistant, so there was a range of their own expertise. We had to train them in delivering it. We supervised them as well. They talked to each other, some to provide some support as they went along. So we're also hoping that it helps us with sustainability, so that we do this intervention for a few years. That now we're studying, there's one more year where we're looking at what happens when we pull out. Do the practices continue the intervention or not? And so if they have someone who's trained to do this, who's committed to doing it, do they still offer it or not? Or is it something that, you know, we come in as kind of university experts and then we leave and it disappears? That won't be good either.
Because as you said in the beginning, the whole point was to try to see how all of this prevention work could actually be translated into the real world.
That's right.
And that's really crucial. I think that's very critical, because it strikes me that so many people in primary care are being asked to do so many things these days. It reminds me almost of the analogous situation of the public school. The public right. school is of the place where now everything is being done, you right. know, diet and mental health services and social services of all kinds. Well, the primary care physician is also being asked to do all of these things for yeah. all their patients. And even though clearly something like this, if it is effective, could, you know, help people in the, you know, over time in a very significant way, the onus falls on the primary care provider.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point, and that was one of the reasons we did not decide to go to the physician themselves and work with them. And there are interventions where they do that. They try to work with the physicians, but it's just too much almost, as you said. And so our thinking was, if you can train people who are
mid-level providers
or even, as I said, one person was a
medical assistant.
And that group was actually our most successful group.
Wow. Well, in the little bit of time we have left, are you hoping to do anything further with this? I mean, do you have follow-up studies in mind?
Yes. Well, we're certainly hoping to. We also want to see, as I said, what happens after we pull out and what goes on there. We are talking with some people about how we can kind of spread the intervention and not just test it in a research model, but actually
provide it as a model.
And provide it as a model and offer it to primary care practices, perhaps, to train their staff or to oversee the process. So we're just starting to talk about that now.
Yeah, I think obviously reimbursement is going to be a big factor
right.
as to whether they can actually follow through on that, but that's
right.
for the future. And
that's
I want
right.
to thank you so much. It's very interesting information.
Okay.
My guest has been Dr. Paula Treif, Professor of Psychiatry and Medicine at Upstate Medical University.
Thank you.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.